What's up, OTG fans? Welcome to a playoff edition of the NBA Outlet. As you know, this is presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you check out our website. Ton of great playoff content. Also, hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me today, our Canadian connection, Jonathan Ibrahim. What's up, Jonathan?
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me on again. There's been a lot of exciting basketball going on. I'm just looking forward to talk about it a little bit with you.
Yes, sir. We got plenty of games to talk about. These series have been pretty entertaining. We're going to start with last night's games. Right off the bat, let's talk Celtics-Bulls. You know, this series started off kind of surprising. The Bulls take the 2-0 lead. Then the Bulls get, you know, devastating news yesterday or the day before that Rajon Rondo is going to miss the rest of the series likely. So the Celtics were able to pull away last night, get an easy W in Chicago in Game 3, put the series at 2-1. What are your thoughts so far on the series, and what do you think is going to happen from here on out?
Well, this series has definitely been a surprise so far. I don't think many of us thought that Chicago was going to jump on them the way they did early. With all the talk about whether or not the Celtics are a very strong first seed, I guess I'm not too surprised that they've lost a few early games, but I still expect them to win this series. It's not going to be easy, but especially with Rajon Rondo going down, I mean, he was kind of a big surprise for them in those first two games. Nobody was expecting him to play the way that he's been playing. So without him, I see a lot easier game for Isaiah Thomas going forward, and I still see the Celtics pulling this one out.
Yeah, I mean, if you tell me Rondo's going to play the rest of the series, I might change my pick to the Bulls. But with Rondo out, I think that helps the Celtics so much. You know, he was playing great. You could see just from the start of the game yesterday, the energy wasn't the same for the Bulls. The pace wasn't the same. The offense wasn't running the same. And defensively, he's had an impact on Isaiah Thomas and just the overall Celtics offense. He's been disrupting it. So I think that's, you know, a huge hit for the Bulls. And especially when you look at the Bulls, like, backup point guard situation, you know, Jerian Grant, Michael Carter-Williams, who lost a jump ball to Isaiah Thomas yesterday, and Cameron Payne, you know, these are guys that, you know, they don't have much playoff experience, and they're not really scaring you. And they had way too many turnovers. So I ask you, a lot of people mentioned this on Twitter, should Fred Hoiberg go with a no point guard lineup?
In this situation, he's got to at least experiment with it. I don't know if he should maybe go, you know, long stretches without a point guard, but with guys like Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler on the team, they can handle the ball. They can create shots for themselves. They can create shots for others. There's a good chance that they can find success with a point guardless lineup. What would be more interesting is how much that's going to help them in terms of the height advantage, because the Celtics have been playing a lot of players that are relatively small. Isaiah Thomas, obviously shorter than your average NBA player. Avery Bradley's a pretty short two guard. Marcus Smart, they've been playing a lot of minutes as well with those two guys. So there'll be a big size advantage. There'll be a big height advantage. So it would be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and I mean, this is already a series where you could see the height advantage is kind of, you know, having an impact with Robin Lopez inside. It's kind of sad for the Celtics. It's like Robin Lopez has kind of really been dominating them, and they don't really have an answer. You know, offensive rebounding, his rim protection, you know, he's definitely had his impact in the series. And even if the Celtics advance, I think that's something that would worry me about this team is just their lack of inside presence. You know, if you can't deal with Robin Lopez, how are you going to advance, you know, further along the line where you're going to have to deal with a lot more, you know, well-balanced attacks?
Yeah, and that really falls on Al Horford's shoulders. I mean, he's not your traditional big man. He's a little bit more skilled and a little less power focused, but he still has to step up and play hard and be that guy for them in these situations. There's no excuse for, you know, kind of that soft big man in this situation.
In the playoffs, you know, you want to play harder, a little bit physical. I think, you know, one of the shots at Horford in the past has probably been he's a little bit soft maybe, you know, for a center. So I think he needs to step up defensively and rebounding-wise. Yesterday he picked up his offensive output. You know, I think he scored like 18. He had a couple assists, 8 rebounds. So, you know, as a team, they stepped up yesterday. Isaiah Thomas only had 16. So I think, you know, when they get back to playing their team ball and they pass the ball, I think that, like, 30-plus assists yesterday. When they get in that style, they run the offense, they make it a lot more difficult to defend, and they hit open shots. You know, in the first two games, they did, you know, miss a fair share of open threes.
Yeah, you're right. And the other part of that is making adjustments. They've got to be able to make adjustments to what Chicago's doing defensively, because obviously Chicago's trying to take away what the Celtics do best, and that's move the ball, find the open shooter. And if they're not being allowed to do that, they have to find a solution. And that's what the playoffs are all about making adjustments. And Brad Stevens is... You know, I trust Brad Stevens to make adjustments and find a way to get that offense going.
And I think the adjustments will be a little bit easier without Rajon Rondo out there. But let's move on to another series that's been catching plenty of hype, and that's OKC and Houston. You know, this has been a great matchup. A lot of people have, you know, been going both ways with this. I know I picked Houston. Harris picked OKC to win the series. I like what I've seen from Houston. Even though they lost last night, I still feel pretty confident about them. I just don't think OKC can put up the offensive firepower on a night-to-night basis, in a quarter-to-quarter basis.
No, I think you're right. And because of the fact that so much of what they try to do offensively rests on Russell Westbrook's shoulders, you saw in the fourth quarter of game two, if they lock in on him and they're not giving him what he wants, they're essentially going to stop the whole team.
Yeah, and I mean, even last night in the fourth quarter, Westbrook still had some questionable plays. I know they won the game, but, you know, he pulled up a few times. He took some shots that he shouldn't have taken, and it was after they ran the pick and roll a few times and they got easy buckets at the rim. So I think he needs to stay controlled. I thought yesterday in that game he was a lot more under control and a lot more – he did a better job of making his teammates better yesterday, and that's something I probably wouldn't say about game one and game two. But yesterday I felt like he got everybody involved. He tried to set guys up, get them in good position to score, and get some easy baskets for everybody.
Yeah, the ball definitely didn't stick as much in game three, and a lot more guys got involved offensively, especially Taj Gibson. You knew he'd rebound. He's not the type of guy to give you two he's not going to lay an egg two games in a row. So it was good to see him get going. But they've got a decent amount of talent on that team, and they should be able to keep this series competitive. So it'd be nice to see this one go seven games.
Yeah, I know that's what the fans want to see. When I look at Houston, I just see so much offensive pop. You know, you have a player like James Harden, who, you know, plenty of teams in this league wish they had. Then, you know, off the bench, you have a guy like Eric Gordon. But not only do you have Eric Gordon, you got Lou Williams off the bench, too. So, and it's not like they don't have other good role player guys like Trevor Ariza. Patrick Beverley didn't have a good game yesterday. Ryan Anderson picked it up. And then Nene has turned back the clock a little bit in the playoffs. So I like what I've seen from Houston. I think this game four will be a big, big game for the series. Houston wins. I think this one probably ends in five. If not, I could see OKC pushing the six or seven.
Hey, even if they do win the next game, I don't count out the Thunder or Russell Westbrook for that matter. I think they could still find a way to push it. It's seven games, even if they do lose the next game. But see, I don't see the Thunder winning this one.
Yeah, the problem is it's so hard for the Thunder. They have to play so well to beat Houston. And Houston kind of has room for mistakes with the offense that they have, and OKC really doesn't.
Yeah, that's exactly it. When one player controls so much of what you're trying to do. In the playoffs, they can really zero in on that. They can really find ways to stop you, and that just really hurts.
Yeah, exactly. And they've made it pretty difficult for Westbrook. They've thrown a lot of different looks at him and whatnot, so definitely something to keep an eye on. Something to keep an eye on is Westbrook's fatigue level. You know, obviously his fourth quarter numbers have been down, and I think some of that probably has to do with fatigue. You know, having to do so much in the playoffs, it's not the regular season. You're not getting those buckets as easy as you were, you know, for those 82 games. Everything's a little bit tighter right now. All the fouls are a little bit harder. So I think that might take a toll on him as the series goes on too.
I think you're right, but that's if he does get tired. I don't know if that's possible.
Does, yeah. But another series, you know, last night pretty much had maybe the three best series of the playoffs right now. And then we had the Clippers and the Jazz. So Clippers were able to pull this one. CP3 pulled some late game heroics, but terrible news for the Clippers today. Blake Griffin has a toe injury and will be out the remainder of the playoffs.
That's really, really unfortunate for Blake and the Clippers. And I mean, this is a team we were kind of waiting to see what they were going to do in this year's playoffs, because it's been one disaster after another over the last 4 or 5 years. And to wake up and see that this morning, it was just kind of disheartening. I'm not a Clippers fan, but you know, it's just sad to see such a good, talented team suffer setback after setback after setback. And I feel really bad for Blake. He doesn't deserve the kind of constant injuries and constant bad luck. So I feel bad for him.
Yeah, I definitely do. And, you know, he catches a lot of hate. And, like, the injuries are starting to pile up for him. And this seems like it's probably going to be the last hurrah for the Clippers. I think they could still win the series. But, you know, going forward, they're not much of a threat. You know, I would have liked to seen them fully healthy for their last hurrah and see if they're able to, you know, compete with somebody in that second round or maybe even get to the Western Conference Finals. But without Blake, it's just tough. You know, it's not like they have a ton of weapons on this team. And I think this kind of, you know, it's a nail in the coffin for the Clippers Lob City days with this team.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what route the organization goes in the offseason. But I think you're right. I think there's going to be some changes made to their roster, some big changes, whether or not that, you know, that involves trading or, you know, not re-signing one of their free agents. I don't know. But they've had their opportunities and they just haven't been able to make it work.
Exactly. And I mean, it's not like, and you don't really look at that team and you're like, well, they're going to get a lot better. So I think we've already seen the best basketball and they just kind of missed their window. Some of it's their fault. Some of it had to do with injuries, but let's talk about the Jazz a little bit. You know, they're missing probably their best player in Rudy Gobert, somebody who has a huge impact offensively and defensively. And last night, Gordon Hayward stepped up big, but the absence of Gobert's presence was definitely missed, especially I felt like in that fourth quarter where CP3 was just getting in the paint and just doing whatever he wanted to. And, you know, he was either laying it up for the teardrop or throwing a lob to DeAndre. And I think Gobert's presence is really missed on that defensive end, especially in that pick and roll presence.
Well, yeah, and it also allows DeAndre to roam defensively. He can basically go where he wants and do what he wants defensively because he doesn't have to stay on a guy like Rudy Gobert. And that means the Clippers' rim protection gets, you know, that much more lethal, and it makes life for the Jazz players that much harder.
Yeah, and I mean, one number I saw yesterday that was just terrible. I'm not 100% this is correct. It was a quick glance, but I'm not mistaken. Derek Favors played 38 minutes and only had 2 points. You know, I know he's banged up, but, you know, with production like that, you're not going to win games.
No, and especially with Rudy down, Derek Favors would be the guy you expect to step up. And I mean, they didn't get any kind of production from their front court at all. It wasn't just Favors. It was Favors, Diaw. They didn't get a lot of, outside of Gordon Hayward, they didn't really get a lot of production out of their front court.
Exactly. I mean, luckily for them, they have some nice depth on this team. You know, they can play some guys, pull them off the bench. I love Joe Johnson. I love what he did with the Nets, and I like to see him play well. And I think he's had a big impact on the series, and he's kind of had a matchup with Blake Griffin a lot, and it's kind of interesting that he's been able to kind of hold his own.
Yeah, Joe Johnson is a tough player. He seems to evolve every year, you know, add something or shows you something new in every year that he plays. And the way he's been playing, especially in that high post situation, he's been awesome for them. So it's been good to watch.
Yeah. What do you think about this series? You feeling the Jazz? Or you feeling the Clippers?
Before I found out that Blake was up for the playoffs, I probably would have said Clippers, no problem. But I mean, that really does change the whole face of the series. I still think the Clippers will probably find a way, maybe in 7 games, to pull this one out. But like you said, with Blake done for the rest of the playoffs, I'm not sure that that they have enough talent to get them outside of the second round. And it's unfortunate because they are a team I did want to see do well this year. I was hoping they would surprise me, but it just doesn't look good.
Yeah, I mean, I thought going into the season, this was finally like a year for them to really capitalize. I thought they'd probably grab one of those that second or third seed. But, you know, things just haven't really worked out. It's just like you mentioned before, just a ton of bad luck for this team. So for me, I still feel pretty good about the Clippers, I guess, like because I feel like Gobert is probably not going to come back this series. I know there's been rumors about it, but even if he does come back, I feel like he's not going to be the same player. And CP3 kind of just had that look in his eyes last night that he knows that he can't lose this first round series.
Yeah, it would be devastating for his legacy, to say the least. I mean, he's had nothing but playoff troubles his whole career. So
exactly,
he knows what this is all about.
And the thing that sucks for Chris Paul is like the playoff struggles. You know, like losing the games and stuff. Some of these games, like he puts up huge numbers, and in some of these series, you know, he pulls games away by himself. But it's still like the narrative that, you know, he doesn't have success in the playoffs. But nothing you can do about that. And then we had another pretty crazy game on Thursday night, Cavs-Pacers. This looked like the Pacers were about to, you know, pull off an impressive Game 3 win in a blowout fashion, you know, but the Cavs had better ideas, especially LeBron James. They came back from the largest halftime deficit, if I'm not mistaken, 25 points, and they did this with mostly LeBron doing most of the work and Kyrie and Kevin Love sitting the entire fourth quarter.
Yeah, this just shows you how great LeBron James is. I know I've said it a few times, but he's a special talent. We're not talking about, you know, the best player in the league. We're talking about one of the two or three best players to ever play basketball. And when you have somebody like that on your squad, it doesn't matter if you're down by 25 or 30 or 45. There's always a way for you to win that game.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of like a game that gives the Cavs some extra energy, some extra pop going into the next round. You know, just, you know, having a comeback like that just, you know, creates great team morale. And seeing like LeBron, seeing your best player go out there and just put out a performance like that. And the crazy thing is, you know, he had like a 40-plus point triple-double, and it's not even one of his top five playoff performances. So that just tells you everything you really need to know about LeBron. And any game, any series, they have a chance.
Yeah, and this is exactly why he is a lock for the finals every year. Every year we try and come up with a team in the East that has a, you know, a chance at knocking them off or beating them. And this year, you heard all the narratives. Boston got the number one seed. Toronto maybe had a good chance of beating them. Washington maybe had a good chance of beating them. But when you look at a guy like LeBron James and what he can give you, especially when your second and third best players shoot a combined 30 or less than 30% from the field, if he can put up a 40-point triple-double, you know, and I think he had 28, 6, and 5 in the second half alone, there's no answer for that. There's no answer in the East. There's no answer in the West. No other player can give you a performance like that in the NBA.
Yeah, and does it in such a dominating fashion where there's like, you know, you see some of the plays and there's really not much that the defender could have done differently. It's just LeBron is so great.
And it's demoralizing that, like, after losing a 25-point halftime lead?
Yep.
After losing a 25-point halftime lead and, you know, losing game three at home, there's going to be very, very little coming out of the Pacers in game four. This is going to be a sweep. I'm almost 100% sure about it. Unless there's some kind of catastrophe on Cleveland's end, but I don't see how Indiana can come back from something like this.
Yeah, I mean, and it just like the Pacers have just, you know, been a complete letdown in the playoffs so far. Game one, they had a great chance to win that game. You could even argue in game two, they had their chances. In this game three, they should have won. This could have easily been a 2-1 Pacers lead in this series, and I don't think anybody would be like, wow, that's crazy or that's impossible. It's really something that could have happened, so the Pacers kind of blew a chance at – I don't think they ever had a real shot at winning the series, but they had a shot at least pushing it 7, and they kind of blew that opportunity with missed opportunities.
Yeah, you're right. And I think if I'm Cleveland, I'm a little bit concerned about a few things, namely the defense, and LeBron's free throw shooting has been particularly bad even for him. But you've got to be happy with the way it's been going. Guys are still going to start getting their confidence back. Team morale is going to be high. This has been a good series for them so far, and it'll be good for them going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think the one issue for me would be the defense is still a concern. And I mentioned this before. I know they have some bad defenders on this team. Some guys that just, even if they play fully engaged at a high level, they're still, you know, they just don't have the foot speed to compete with some of the guys out there. So going forward, I think they're going to, I wouldn't be surprised if they mess with the rotation a little bit against certain matchups, because there's going to be certain matchups where they can't play some of these guys because they're just going to get exploited.
The other side of that is, I mean, the Cavs are really just waiting for the finals. They need to get through the next two rounds after this, and you know, they'll do it whatever way they need to do it. But you'll see when they get to the finals, that rotation is going to shrink.
Yeah,
They're not going to be playing, you know, 10, 11 guys. They're going to be playing their starting five, and then they'll maybe get, you know, a few minutes out of Deron Williams, a few minutes out of Iman Shumpert, and a few minutes out of Kyle Korver. But outside of that, it's going to be LeBron, Tristan, JR, Kyrie, and Kevin Love really just doing most of the heavy lifting.
Yeah, and I think they need to see some more consistency out of Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, both offensively and defensively. You know, sometimes it's like they're waiting for LeBron to do everything, or they're just not like fully into it. And I know they can turn it to another level, but I, you know, as if I was a fan of the Cavs, I would rather see them get, you know, into those better habits sooner than later. You know, in my opinion, the Warriors are on a whole nother level than any team in the East. So turning up from whoever you're going to face in the Eastern Conference Finals to what you're going to face in the Finals is going to be a completely different team.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they respond to that, because even last season you saw the Cavaliers were not ready for the Warriors in Game 1 and 2. They got jumped on right away, and I mean, luckily for them, they managed to come back and win that series. We all know it became a classic Game 7, but early in that series it looked like it could be a sweep.
Yeah, it did. It looked like it looked pretty scary for a Cavs perspective, but, you know, they made the adjustments. Kyrie and LeBron put on some historical performances, and history was written. But onto a series that's a little bit close to you, and it's kind of been a disappointment, and that's the Raptors and the Bucks.
Do we have to talk about this one?
We have to talk about it a little bit. I personally, you know, I talked to you in the past, and, you know, you kind of got me sold on the Raptors a little bit. And I went into this series kind of showing them a good amount of respect, and they've just kind of let me down.
Yeah, well, welcome to being a Raptors fan. it's an annual thing to watch. But I think the kind of the takeaway I got from game three is that they need a new head coach. And, you know, there are camps in Toronto that really don't like Dwayne Casey, that they would really like to see him replaced. And I've kind of been on the fence the last year or two, but the problem with Casey is that he doesn't make adjustments in the playoffs. We know what the Bucks are trying to do. We know what they're trying to take away from Toronto. The fact that he hasn't made those adjustments yet, the fact that everything is still the status quo, that tells me that he's not the right coach for them going forward. And if they lose this series, I really wouldn't be surprised if he's replaced in the offseason, because it's not just one poor playoff performance. There was Brooklyn in 2014, Washington in 2015, and then last season, even though they made it to the conference finals, 2 7-game series against teams they should have beat pretty easily. And the fact that Kyle Lowry and DeRozan underperform game in and game out in the playoffs just shows you that he's not making the adjustments that he needs to make.
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually remember in that first round against Brooklyn where they lost, and there was a lot of people who wanted Casey gone at that point. And then, you know, obviously the next year against Washington, I thought he was a lock to be gone. But then they had some success last year, but I agree with you in the fact that they should have beat the Pacers. The Pacers easily could have won that series, and the Heat could have easily won the next series. So I wouldn't be upset if Dwayne Casey got knocked down Toronto. I'm kind of interested to see what's going to happen. Like, depending on how long the series goes, if it's a quick series or the Raptors are able to, you know, come back and push it far, do you think there could be some changes to the team in the summer?
There definitely could be. I would, if I was advising Masai Ujiri, I would tell him to leave the roster as is and give them an opportunity to play under a different coach. Their problems don't stem from talent. Their problem stems from the fact that they have probably the worst designed offense. No matter how successful it is during the regular season, it is a poorly, poorly, poorly run offense. They had the lowest number of assists in the entire NBA during the regular season, and that's nothing new. That's been the case for the last few seasons. It's isolation heavy, and we're seeing in the rest of the NBA, teams aren't doing that anymore. The Warriors have revolutionized basketball. The Cavs are moving the ball. Nobody plays that way anymore, and you can't win like that in the playoffs because the other team is going to look at you and go, okay, 90% of the offense goes through your two guards. If we stop them, what are you going to do? And the problem is, instead of trying to make an adjustment, they just keep doing the same thing over and over again. Kyle will shoot 30%. DeMar DeRozan shot 0% in game three, and they didn't make any adjustments from game one and two.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think, you know, a lot of people think about DeRozan and Lowry and it falling on them, but I think you're right. Some of it does fall on Casey. You need to put your players in a situation to succeed. And just allowing them to run these ISO situations against a long, lanky team like Milwaukee, who's going to focus on these two guys, you know, you're just asking to lose games. Yeah. But enough about the Raptors. Let's talk a little bit about the Bucks. Giannis has kind of had his coming out party. Obviously, this season he was ridiculous, but a lot of people still were a little bit sleep on him. This series, he's kind of put it to another level. What have you seen from him that you liked?
Well, I like his entire game. It's he doesn't just kill you one way or hurt you, you know, from the post or from the perimeter. He does it from all over the floor. And then if you take away his scoring, he's a good playmaker. If you take away his playmaking, he's a good rebounder. He'll get you extra possessions. He'll protect the rim. He can strip guards. He literally does everything well. The only thing he's got to fix is that outside shooting. And once he gets that down, he's going to be a phenomenal player.
Yeah, he's going to be in that deadly category as soon as he adds that outside shot. His length is just so ridiculous, and his ability to handle the ball at that size just makes it another level. And just defending him, and I think you pointed at two great points. You know, a lot of things that get under the radar is his offensive rebounding. You know, he grabs you a few extra possessions here and there with that length, just tipping the ball or disrupting things. And then his ability to be a rim protector. If I'm not mistaken, he averaged, like, if not two blocks, right under two blocks a game this year. So you're getting that out of your, I don't even know what position you put him at. You know, you're getting that out of your point forward, point guard, whatever he is. And he's out there able to probably defend all five positions and offensively play almost all five positions. He's just a unique player.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen anything like Giannis in the NBA before. It'll be interesting to see where his star goes. But like you said, I think the Raptors, for the most part, in the last two games, they've done a good job of defending him. I know he shot 70% in game three, but it was off of pretty selective looks, and he shot 100% from the three-point line. So, you know, there was a little bit of luck involved with that. But I think the Raptors are doing a good job of defending him, but he just does so many different things so well that, okay, if you take one aspect of his game away, he'll hurt you in three other ways.
Exactly. And the rest of the Bucks have kind of been impressive too. Some of these young guys, Malcolm Brogdon, Thon Maker, Chris Middleton, guys with not a ton of playoff experience coming through and playing pretty well in this playoff series against a better Raptors team.
I've been more impressed with Chris Middleton in this playoff series than Giannis, to be honest, because I kind of knew what Giannis could bring. I've been watching him all year long. But with Chris Middleton, the way he's been playing, the way he's been shooting the basketball, he looks so calm and collected pretty much all three games so far. I've been really, really impressed with the way he's been playing. He's been a great player for them so far.
Yeah, he's always a player I really liked as well, and it's nice to see him come back from an injury that happened this year and be able to play so well in the postseason. A lot of times, you know, you guys guys have these major injuries, and they're not able to come back for a whole year or not even a year and a half till they get to fully healthy.
Yeah, this team's going to be really good when Jabari Parker comes back. With those three guys, Chris Middleton, Giannis, and Jabari, I mean, that the length on those perimeter players, the height on those perimeter players, that's something special. They're going to be a good team next year.
Yeah, and I think it's a good, you know, Jason Kidd obviously did the Nets dirty, but I think he's a good fit in Milwaukee, and I think that team has a bright future. What are your picks, your pick for this game today? What do you think pulls out the W?
All right, I think the Raptors are going to win tonight. If they don't, this series will be over pretty quickly. But I like to think that there's enough firepower there that they can overcome the Bucks in game four. The Bucks don't have a huge home court advantage, so I think the Raptors will pull it out, but it wouldn't be the first time I was wrong about the Raptors.
Yeah, I think the Raptors need to pull this one out. I don't know how I feel about them winning the series anymore, but I think this is a big game for them. I think there's enough veterans on this team that, you know, they know that we can't lose this one, because if we lose this one, we're probably losing in five.
Yeah, it'll all come down to the adjustments they make. If they can find a way to limit the effectiveness of Milwaukee's bigs, I would love for them to play Jonas Valanciunas a little bit more and run the ball through him on offense a little bit more, because that'll punish Jason Kidd for playing Thon Maker as much as he's been playing him. Thon Maker, as good of a rim protector as he is, he's a thin rookie.
Yeah, he's not a big guy.
He gives up 50, 60 pounds to Jonas Valanciunas. There's no reason why the ball shouldn't be going into him, and he should be posting up and banging them down low and making sure that they get some easy buckets that way.
Yeah, honestly, Valanciunas is one guy going to the series I thought would have a bigger impact. I think some of that falls on him being not as aggressive enough, but also some of it on Dwayne Casey not getting him involved. So I would like to see him get more touches. I think if I was the Raptors, I'd want to take advantage of some of the size you have inside with Ibaka and Valanciunas, you know, kind of work on those boards a little bit. But that really hasn't been the case. On to the Hawks and Washington series, Hawks and Wizards. You know, this series has kind of caught some hype going into the playoffs. I don't think it's been quite as exciting as people hoped. Washington kind of just, I think, has too much talent for Atlanta. Atlanta, you know, they were a good defensive team this year. Offensively, they're not the same as they used to be. And Washington, on the other hand, they're a good offensive team with the ability to play great defense. So I think Atlanta, this is a big game three for them. And if they're going to try to, you know, turn the series around, they're going to need to win today.
Yeah, I think you're right. If they lose this game, I think the series will be over in four. I still think the series has the potential to go to seven games. Paul Millsap is, you know, arguably probably the best front court player in the series. They still have Dwight Howard. It's about making adjustments and finding a way to kind of get their offense going and you know, limit what Washington's been able to do. John Wall and Bradley Beal have basically been able to do whatever they want all series long. And in order to kind of win a few games, they need to kind of limit those two guys' effectiveness, especially John Wall. He's been ridiculous this series. So I think they can hold their own and win a couple of games at home, but it'll be tough for sure.
Yeah, I think for them, like you said, they need to limit John Wall and Bradley Beal, make some of the role players beat you. Paul Millsap has definitely stepped up his game. I think Dwight has kind of been a disappointment. I think people going to this series expected him to have more of an impact, you know, in the playoffs, playing in front of his hometown in Atlanta. Like, he needs to step it up a little bit. So I think the Hawks, I just don't know if I see this series going deep. I feel like the Wizards will probably end this maybe in five or six.
They definitely have that potential. It's just, I hate to kind of sell the Hawks short. They are a good team, and you know, again, this it was a rough second half of the season for them, and it's been a rough start to the playoffs. But they have a lot of talent. Dennis Schroeder's been playing well, like you said. Paul Millsap's been playing well. If they can get a little bit out of Dwight, I don't know what the problem is there. I think he's averaging 5 or 6 points throughout the first two games. They need to get a lot more out of him and kind of take advantage of the size advantage that he has down low. And if they can't do that, you're right, it'll be a short series. But I think they'll start to get a little bit more out of those players and maybe push this series a little bit more.
And they're a well-coached team, so I wouldn't be surprised if they make some smart adjustments for game three.
And that's huge, right? If they can make some adjustments and find something, find somewhere where Washington's weak, that could change the entire series.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't know. I just feel like that talent on Washington, I feel like people are sleeping on Washington a little bit. It's because of the inconsistency they had during the regular season. But I look at this team and I just see so much like pop, you know, from the start. You have John Wall, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter, who is a top 5 3-point shooter, Markieff Morris, who, you know, he can play well, he can get hot, and he has that little extra edge. He kind of gives him that like physical aggressive behavior. Marcin Gortat, Brandon Jennings got really hot the other night. Bojan Bogdanovic is decent. I think the major issue when I look at the Wizards, though, is they have no depth in their front court.
Yeah, and that's rough, especially in the playoffs. But as they progress in the if they do beat Atlanta, their starters are going to be playing more minutes, and there can be less of a need for that depth. And so I think they'll be okay that way.
Who's your pick for today's game?
In this series?
In this series, yeah.
I'm going to go with Atlanta. I think Schroeder and Millsap will have big games, and then hopefully Dwight gives them something on both ends, push them over the edge. I think Atlanta will win this one.
I'll go with Washington today. I don't know why. I'm just kind of riding that Washington hype train a little bit. But on to another series in a game that really surprised me personally was Spurs and Grizzlies, and the Grizz came out and performed after Fizdale went on his rant. And that's not something you see is, you know, like you see a Spurs team get blown out in a playoffs like this.
Yeah, but it just seems that Memphis, the way they play and their style, they seem to be the Spurs' Achilles heel. They, you know, every time they have games like this in the playoffs, it seems to be against Memphis.
Yeah, it's weird stuff, and I mean, like, you got to give the Grizzlies a lot of credit because obviously the Spurs are the more talented team. They're the better team in the series, but they came out and played hard, and they have guys playing well over their talent level. You know, they don't really have much on this team that are able to, you know, like put up a ton of points or a ton of big names. You look at Mike Conley, you look at Zebo, you look at Marc Gasol, and you got 40-year-old Vince Carter putting up buckets and playing big minutes. So it's pretty interesting stuff from the Grizz. You got to give them a lot of credit for pulling that one away in game three.
Yeah, it just comes down to their style of play. When you have those two big guys constantly kind of leaning on you, pushing you around, it starts to wear on you. And I don't think LaMarcus Aldridge or Paul Gasol are the type of center or power forward that you want going up against, like, you know, guys like Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph. So I think that really hurt them. And then Mike Conley is just probably the most composed point guard in the NBA. He really controls the tempo.
Very under control. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't always try to do too much. Once in a while he will, but, you know, it's because the team needs it. So. And like you said, I thought you made a great point with the Paul Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge. They're not like necessarily the most physical bigs in the league. And when you go against a Marc Gasol and a Zach Randolph, you know, two guys who are going to bang bodies all night long, it kind of helps them out, gives them that edge. Who's your pick for tonight?
As much as I'd like to see Memphis make a series out of this, I think Pop's going to make some adjustments. And I think the Spurs are going to end up winning this series in 5 games. Something interesting about the Spurs is that in game three, they played 13 different players. And I think maybe if Pop wants this series to be a little bit shorter, he'll tighten that rotation a little bit and keep his starters up there a little bit longer, keep Kawhi out there for longer than 30 minutes and get this series over.
Yeah. Kawhi wasn't his regular Terminator self in game three. I think that'll change in game four. Expect the Spurs to, you know, bounce back and get the win. It was nice for the Grizz to get that game three win and prevent the sweep. It could maybe go 6, but I like the 5, just like you. And then for our last game, the last game of the night, it's going to be the Golden State Warriors and the Portland Trail Blazers. This series is probably the series, I'll be honest, I've watched the least. I've been the least intrigued by, just because I know what the results are going to be, and there's not really anything that's going to super surprising to me. But what have your thoughts so far on the Golden State and Portland series?
I think the biggest takeaway from this series is that Golden State is what we thought they were, and Portland is what we thought they were. It's pretty much been, you know, business as usual for the Warriors. The ball movement's been incredible. The offense has been incredible. They missed Durant for the last game. They still won by double digits. It's just very typical Warriors basketball. And then from Portland, we see much of the same, right? It's a shame that Nurkic isn't playing, because I do feel like he would have been a difference maker. But with Lillard playing the way he's been playing, and CJ McCollum playing the way he's been playing, they got to like the fact that they have such a talented backcourt going forward, but it's not going to be enough for them to even win a game in this series. I think the Warriors are going to probably complete the sweep.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous that a team can rest, essentially rest Kevin Durant in the playoffs. I know he has an injury, but he probably could have played through it if it was a bigger game. And they can still win by double digits, and it just tells you how great the Warriors really are. And Portland, on the other hand, you know, they do have the great backcourt. They miss Nurkic. I think an issue for them is going to be their money situation. They have a lot of – I mentioned this before on multiple podcasts. They have a lot of money locked up in about three positions, so they're going to have to probably make some moves and try to figure something out to put this team at the next level.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the route they go, especially being an 8th seed. Those are always kind of teams that can go either way. But I think you're right. I think they'll make a few nice changes to their roster and hopefully climb up the ladder a little bit.
I know they have, I think, three first-round picks, so they could definitely get a little creative this summer.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they keep those picks or if they try and move them. Because I know other than the top few picks in this draft, there's not a ton of great first round prospect, so it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, it'll definitely, you know, kind of give you an idea what their look at is at this team and like what they think about it going forward, and they need to add another star or they just need to add role players. But pick for this game,
I think the Warriors are going to win by double digits.
Yep, same thing here. Warriors by double digits. Sorry, Portland. Sorry, Dame. But you just don't have enough juice. But that wraps it up for today. Touching every playoff series. We'll probably be dropping another pod for you tomorrow and another one this week. So definitely keep an eye on for that. And as always, thanks for listening. Jonathan, thanks for hopping on.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.